This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that, your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right, we're back with We Want Winners. Rod, as I thought about today's theme, in the back of my mind was the Mike Silver book that I keep talking about. Because in the Mike Silver book, where he covers Kyle, he covers Sean McVay, Mike McDaniel, both LaFleur brothers, there's kind of a theme in that, you know, not all of those teams are playing well at the same time. As Sean McVay is rising, the 49ers are falling off a little bit. As LaFleur and the Packers are struggling, you know, it is at the feet of the 49ers. And so I'm listening back to this book and I'm thinking, okay, do we have a 2021 season where the Niners start off very average and poorly, and then they find it, and then they just catch fire and have a great second half? Or do we have a 2020 season where the expectation is that, you know, they're going to be able to do stuff, but then injuries happen and they don't? And I thought this was a really good litmus test for how optimistic we should be about who this team really is. Now, you look at the NFC West, they could win a few games in a row and totally be fine. There's Arizona 6-4, everyone else is 5-5. But when it comes to what I saw when I turned the other channel, when it's Kansas City and Buffalo, I did not come out of this game thinking that they can catch fire and be one of the best teams in the league. Is that too early, or did you feel similarly?
My overall take, again, I make the mistake of going online and trying to take a pulse of the fan base. And the thing that is so frustrating to me is that everybody is so reductionist. It's Kyle, or it's Sorensen, or it's anybody but Brock. But my thing is, it would be great if it was just one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. This is, you know, this really is my worst fear realized. It's the fact that, okay, Nick goes out and the defense falls. Okay, that's fine. But it speaks more to a holistic thing, is that, you know, I just don't know how talented this football team is. That is what I walk away from just asking myself is, you know, everybody just assumed that they, you know, we were what, an overtime away from a Super Bowl win. And we just felt like we'd run it back, add a few pieces. That's the way I felt, at least, from what I saw the moves they made. They felt like they were, you know, they were just, those are all the additions this offseason were maintenance pieces. It was not an acknowledgement that they needed to make any huge additions. They just felt like, you know, on the defensive interior, it seemed to me that the notion was that Hargrave would play better and then these guys would be fine, that Nick would dominate. And then, you know, having a second tier, second banana on the right side would be fine. I didn't agree at the time. So it's not like I'm being revisionist. I said at the time, I didn't feel like they were making those moves smelled of a team that felt like they were just one player away and that they were doing everything that they could to kick and scratch and claw and keep that window open. I just didn't get that feeling. And to me, it's come to pass. We just weren't good enough today. And you could say that it was all the fact that Nick went out. And that's, I'm not going to argue it.
Can I actually say something about Nick going out? Mm-hmm. He actually did play well. I was watching him. Mm-hmm. He looked so much better than he did last week. Right when he came out, it was almost as if Seattle's offensive coordinator was like, finally, we can do stuff now. They started dialing up creative screens. Like, they didn't have to worry about, you know, getting to two Mississippi and letting the ball go. They were like, mm-hmm. okay, we believe that we can actually do this. Now, Leonard Floyd did get a sack. Who also got a sack? Someone on the defensive line got a sack. So they did bring some pressure, but it was almost like Seattle's offense was like, it was like a early Christmas present for Nick to be out. And then what we saw on the last drive is because they were in hurry up, Niners couldn't get any of their players off the field. I don't know if you saw this, but it was the first run, Geno's first run, not the touchdown run, but the run right before that. Leonard Floyd almost doesn't even get in a stance. He's so tired. He starts to his pass rush. He gets chipped by a wide receiver and almost goes down. He's so tired. Geno goes by him. He kind of throws his arm out and he turns around. And it was almost like, I got nothing. I can't even attempt to run after this guy. So that dude was tired, or whatever it was, fatigue. They couldn't get off the field. And, you know, if it's not saying that Nick wouldn't get tired, Nick would have gotten tired. Mm-hmm. Too. He's just a younger man. He's better. You know, we know that he's just a crazily mm-hmm. trained athlete. So that was one example of where if Nick is in the game, it's a little bit different there in, you know, we're talking about they can't keep Geno out of the end zone at the end there. The other thing that I would suggest is, and we'll talk about this as my first thing that I didn't like, which is Shanahan must see ghosts in these type of games, because this is the third game this season where it was pretty clear that the Niners had the advantage, even though I didn't think that they played great. They played good enough to beat Seattle. I actually wrote in our Discord that, you know, the Niners aren't playing great, but the best thing about it is neither is Seattle. Like, they were both just playing blah football. And so Niners are still winning. And then we get to that last drive. I have the play calls up because I wanted to remember it correctly. So the Niners have the ball in their own 37. McCaffrey with maybe his best burst all game long, 11 yards. Next play, McCaffrey gets stuffed, but then there's a defensive holding. So first down, Niners are across the 50. So they're in Seattle territory. Loses a yard, timeout Seattle. And then Shanahan goes to the play action. I understand. I mean, even Greg Olsen was calling for it. And I'm not even saying that was the wrong call. Like, we've said over and over and over, Shanahan knows so much more about football in his left pinky than I know in my entire brain. But what the facts point out is that he is often dialing up either the wrong thing or the players are in this situation where they're not actually executing what he's calling. Had he run there, Seattle would have. I think they would have had to burn the second timeout because there was still 3 minutes left, about 3 minutes left. So then they would have run another play, and if they would have run a running play, and even if they would have had to punt, then you kick it to Seattle, and they have less than 2 minutes left. Instead, the way that they did it, Seattle had one timeout left, and they had the ball with 2 minutes and 45 seconds. Now, you know, maybe if the new punter O'Donnell, you know, gives them a little bit of a better punt, whatever. Those are also things in this scenario. But my point is not about, you know, Shanahan lost the game. My point is that this dude, he has had these situations time and time again in his career, but this season that is fresh on our minds, and whatever he is dialing up is not the right thing for his offense. And it's just frustrating because had he actually gone conservative, and they would have, Seattle would have had one timeout and the ball with 2 minutes left, that is preferable than what the Niners allowed them, which was an extra 45 seconds and an extra timeout. And Geno just, he did his thing and they lost the game. But whatever that is, that just disconnection from the offense and him calling plays with the lead late in the game. There was a stat that said the Niners gave up the most points in the last 2 minutes of the game in the NFL this year. That also had to kind of be in the back of their mind about, okay, you know, we kind of have to make this difficult because this is what we do this year, and they didn't. So that is there. I'm not accusing anybody of being bad at anything. I'm just saying this dude has been in this moment a few times, and you reverse that moment in all three games or in two out of the three games, our outlook on this season is much different.
Yeah, I think, you know, I have just recently started the book that you keep going back to. And again, what I took away from that first and foremost is it kind of jives with what I have always believed, that it's the Jims and Joes, not the X's and O's. And the thing about, like, today, for example, just as an example, I don't know if when you tell me the way the game had been playing out, if you tell me that we got one play to steal the game, do I want to put it in Brock's hands or do I want to put it in the offensive line's hands? I don't know. I mean, if Brock is the guy, then those are the, you know, he needs to make a play there. I mean, I know it's not apples to apples. It's not apples to apples, but you look at the end of the Buffalo game. They put that game in Josh Allen's hands. Absolutely. and and he brought it home. I mean, so I don't
did
know.
You re-
I mean, and
I'm did not you saying rewatch that play.
Which
the,
one?
The Debo, the play action to Debo play.
Yeah. Yeah.
So either it looked like the defensive back changed the route for Debo slightly. I think mm-hmm. he was supposed to actually go a little deeper, but the defensive back kind of forced him to make mm-hmm. his move a little bit sooner.
Rerouted him.
Mm-hmm. You saw a lot of people say, oh, you know, Brock's throwing the ball. You know, he expected Wemby to be there to make that catch. And it was a miscommunication. And I don't know, again, we're going back to sort of, you know, dialing that play up.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who was absolutely in his bag and on fire in that game was Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
Debo had very little to do with what they were doing offensively. I don't know if he was bottled up. I don't know if the game plan went away from him. That is not stuff that we can necessarily see on the television mm-hmm. screen. But to me, because what you just said, it's about the players over the plays. Two people in the Niners offense, unless you were designing a run for Brock, because there were moments where he was actually very successful on his feet. You got to get the ball to CMC, got to get the ball to JJ. And they dialed up the play for Debo. I'm sure in the back of Shanahan's mind, he very much trusts Debo to make a play, but he and Brock are off on that throw. You know what's interesting is in that book that we're talking about, We always hear the story that Shanahan picked on Ayuk in his rookie year, and really was hard on Ayuk, you know, to be a professional. But what Mike Silver writes is that he was the same with Debo, and to the point where Debo was really frustrated at feeling picked on in a sense. I every time I see Debo on the field, I'm like, man, he's like very close to doing something, breaking one or whatever. But they ran the couple of wide runs with him today that just didn't really work. He wasn't really a fixture in the passing game. You know, he's probably the one who was actually hurt more by Ayuk being gone because he just gets more attention. And so all of those things being said, I know Shanahan knows that, but still he dialed up that play for Debo instead of JJ. Maybe he's worried about JJ's speed and not being able to get out on the break as well. Whatever it was, also pretty Ricky Pearsall was a no-show today. I saw him on the field like one time, I think. So the offense is sputtering. He makes a decision. That was the play call. It's almost like he's just befuddled in these moments about what the right thing is. And some of that is on your quarterback. Some of that is on the play call too, though. I was kind of frustrated when I saw what the design was, because I was like, man, Debo has not done anything all day long. And maybe he saw something that said, if we just do this correctly, Debo could take it to the house. And I'm sure that was part of the algorithm there. But yeah, just that was frustrating to me, because in the back of my mind, I was doing the math problem, which was run, 2-minute warning, Gino, one timeout. It makes it so much harder because you're the team that is actually playing with the lead, knowing that they can't even tie with a field goal. I think that was the moment to play conservatively. But that's just often not Shanahan's game.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch the All-22 on that play specifically to see what they did to CMC and what they did to Jennings, because depending on how they defense them, maybe Shanahan thought or Brock thought that was the place to go if he was the one who had the least amount of attention on him. And anytime you get the ball in his hands, he is subject to, you know, break a tackle and do whatever. But again, like you had also said, I rewatched the play, but it looked to me in the moment that he might have been rerouted in a way that maybe he wasn't exactly where Brock thought he was going to be get to. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to rewatch that. But yeah, it's all of it is just really frustrating, because it was, again, it was one of those deals where it was, the foreboding was uncanny, because when they don't make it there, it's like, here we go yet again. And this time, you know, it was, previously it didn't come to pass last week. They were able to hang on, but this week, not so much. And it's a frustrating situation. I'm not one to like give up on them, but you know, here again, we've got to go on the road again, against a pretty good football team. So next week, it doesn't get any easier the next 2 weeks.
They have they play two out of the top three teams to end the season in Buffalo in 2 weeks, and then the Lions to end the season. The Lions probably will not even need to care about that game, actually in a second to last game of the season. Mm-hmm. And the Niners very much will probably need to care about that game unless they just have no chance. So that will be interesting. I don't know if that will be actually a great test to see who's better, but you know,
sneakily,
the title game matchup.
Sneakily, that last game of the season could be for the playoffs.
49ers Cardinals, you're talking about.
Yep, absolutely. Which is ridiculous to me to even fathom, because I didn't think the Cardinals would be very good, honestly. And there's still time for them to falter, but right now they are the class of the division.
What else was on your list of things that you did not like out there watching?
Let's see. Let's get there. Again, it's like the same old, same old. The red zone inefficiency, you know, cropped its ugly head again. And, you know, I was foolish, like many of us were, who just thought that Christian would come back and all, you know, that would put deodorant on all of those issues. And it just, you know, it's just a recurring theme. You know, it's just, I guess I'm not smart enough to just look at it, and maybe it's just not just one thing as the reason why we aren't effective there this season, in a way that, you know, we've gone from like literally the top of the league to the bottom of the league in that category. And that, you know, that's why it was easy. The reductionist way of looking at it was, well, the only difference between this year and last year is Christian, which is not true. You know, BA not being there has to be, you know, as Olsen pointed out during the game, which I hadn't really thought about, but, you know, BA kind of being, you know, if you look at everybody's role in the offense, BA being like the man beater opened up, you know, everybody else to kind of do their thing in zone coverage. And it just, they have just been missing that. And then today, you know, specifically with George not being there,
that was the big thing for me, was no
that's
George.
Obviously huge. Yeah.
You know, not only just as a red zone threat, because he's probably the best red zone threat in the passing game right now. He and Purdy have been, you know, the best out of what we've seen. The other thing was that offense was sleepy. And I know, yeah, watching George all these years, he would not have stood for that. He would have tried to, you know, he would have fired them up in one way. And just to kind of add to your point, which is, we get the interception at the beginning of the second half, and the fans are ready. If the Niners score a touchdown, these fans are ready to just explode, because what that interception tells the fans is that, okay, like that first half, like just throw it away. Like they're coming out in it as a different team. And they go backwards. Penalties, just whatever those plays were, you know, Brock's incompletions, and then they got to kick a field goal. And that right there kind of told the Seahawks, like, okay, we're good. We're still good. Because I'm sure that Geno was like, oh, my God, here we go. I just gave them all the momentum in the world, and they could not take it. And I feel like, you know, that's where you miss a George, because Brock didn't really have any outlets, though. This was an interesting thing, and this is why I like the Greg Olsen team way better than that Tom Brady team. Olsen is willing to point out things that maybe Brock Purdy is not doing, in a very sort of teaching way, not in a
critical way.
I'm Tom Brady, and, you know, this little shit who got drafted in the seventh round, I don't want his story to be better than mine, kind of way. And he pointed out that there were moments when Brock decided to run that had he just thrown it to Christian, you actually have a better opportunity to break a play. Now, Brock, I started calling him YOLO Brock today, because I was like, this dude is like, being really confident in his ability to get out of the pocket, and he's not sliding. He's doing a lot of diving. And I'm just like, man, you know, one hit to the lower back, and, you know, could be, you know, talk about the season, you know, that could be the season. But I liked what Olsen said, because I was thinking the same thing, like, wait a second. we just added the most valuable dual back in the league, whose strength, main strength over JP, is that he can actually catch the ball in the backfield. And they didn't take advantage of it in those moments. And Brock kind of was running with his head down, almost like, I can pick up these yards, you know, kind of Mahomes-ish in a sense, but mm-hmm. Mahomes uses a lot more decoys to set up that run, whereas Brock looked like he wanted to be the running back out there. And, you know, and this is no shade at Brock, because he picked up some tough yards, including that first touchdown where he dove at the pylon. Like, that's just football. That dude is playing football. But at the same time, I would rather have the ball in CMC's hands, you know, with opportunity and space than Brock's. Like, that, you, anybody would. That's what Shanahan wants too. So that is something to look at. I wonder if they're going to make it a point for Brock to kind of pull up in those moments and be like, oh yeah, I have this guy here. I don't have to do this by myself.
Yeah, it was very fortuitous for Olsen to mention it. I don't know if that's why he mentioned it, but the play where he mentions it, it was right there. You know, he runs, and, you know, Christian, when you look downfield, he's like right there with nobody anywhere near him. And if there's anything, one thing we know about Christian is he is very adept at making people miss and turning, you know, 5 yards into 15. So just get him the ball. He's going to be far more effective at making a play. No shade on Brock, but if you had a choice between CMC or Brock to go out and make a play, I mean, that's an easy call. Just get him the ball. And it just makes, you know, like we said in the offseason, you know, that's, he's a cheat code in that way for Brock. You know, he can just get him the ball and, you know, good things are bound to happen. You know, if the play is bad, if you just check it to him, he can make it a good play. He can make a good play, a great play. So hopefully, you know, he's, you know, what is this week? 2 back, 3 back? I lose track, but, you know, So maybe he's just, you know, getting comfortable again with, you know, because, you know, for the first, you know, 8 games, that wasn't a option. So I'll give him the benefit on that, on the doubt on that, but I'm sure there will be film study this week to be able to show him and make the coaching point that, hey, you're making it harder on yourself when you just get the ball out of your hand and let him, you know, do the heavy lifting.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I can't throw any shade at the defense today because they kept Geno under wraps until that last drive. You know, Geno mm-hmm. leads the NFL in yards per game through the air, and they held him in check for the most part. He was having to, you know, to go through all kinds of different reads. And I thought defensively the game plan was really good. He only threw for 221 yards. Likewise for the Seahawks, though. I thought they did a great job with Brock and the 49ers offense too. Even the run game, you know, Kenneth Walker, he was solid, but, you know, he didn't break anything. Receiving, it was Smith, Jigba had a really good game, but it was all real underneath stuff. You know, he just has the ability, who's catching a lot of stuff underneath, and that was kind of the guy who Geno's going through. So I can't shade the defense pretty much at all. But I guess the other negative for me is just all of these offensive line penalties. Like, it was almost like, you know, sometimes you kind of wonder about, okay, what was the focus on in practice or whatever? What's the game plan? And they just, I don't know what the deal was, but you had holding calls and false starts and, you know, and these penalties really mattered because they took away some big plays. And we're going to have issues with this offensive line just because they're an average unit, even with a Hall of Famer on the left side there. You know, when you have McKivitz and folks, and he gave up a pretty bad sack in the game as well. But, you know, Brendel, like these guys are just, not only are they probably some of the reason why Purdy has to sneak out or that he feels he has to sneak out, but then you add these penalties on top of it. And I can't imagine that that they had good grades today from the people who do that stuff.
9 for 54. And like you say, nine is a huge number. And there's no way, there's no two ways about that. But it just seemed like they were all just very inopportune as well. And then just dumb ones, like the one where they called it on Trent, but like Olsen showed, it was, you know, both. I forget who the second receiver was, but and Pearsall, Pretty Ricky, were both, they were lined up in the backfield, so yeah. Trent was uncovered. So right. I mean, those, you know, formation penalties are just dumb. I mean, there's really no, especially with wide receivers, when all you have to do is ask the line judge and he'll tell you, you know, where you know, if you need to move up or not. It's just, those are just attention to detail errors that are just frustrating at this point in the season.
Stuff that if they were, you know, if they were cooking with grease, that's just stuff that wouldn't happen. And that is also another thing that tells you that they're not all in sync is the silly penalties like that. You know, everything, when you put it all together, when you put the soup together, it just tells you like, yeah, they're not elite in any way through 11 weeks so far. And that is the pill that we have to swallow. Was there anything else negative on your end?
There was, but it was not so much a negative, but we covered it exactly how I would have hoped we would when it came to Kyle's play calling. I hesitate to criticize it, but it did seem a bit conservative. And why was it conservative? I don't know what he was seeing. I don't know what he's seeing in the defense. I don't know what he was seeing in his guys and their ability to execute anything. Because that's, you know, anytime anybody's criticizing this play call, that's the first thing I tend to lean to is, I mean, okay, it's a conservative call. If we're not executing it, do you think an exotic call is going to go any better? I mean,
you know what I want? I want the exotic design with the motion and with the defense reacting, going like, uh-oh, this is not what we think happens. And then you do something that sticks to the run game. That's what I was kind of hoping for was, Kyle's going to put together this run play. The defense is going to think it's a pass. CMC is going to the end zone. That's kind of it, my hope of what was going to happen. And then the play action pass happened. You know, in the book, as you'll get to it, they talk about the Falcons and the Patriots Super Bowl. And there's a quote where Shanahan says something like, you know, F it. Like, that's just his mentality when it comes to moments like that. Like, if he sees something that he believes he can take advantage of, he is usually going to attack it rather than go, okay, we have to pull this back just for the chance that we can't execute it. Like, he always believes in like sort of the effort idea if he feels that they have an advantage. And so that's why I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt there. Maybe he saw something with that play where he was like, all Debo's got to do is catch this and he's going to score. And
we can hit it.
Yeah. And, you know, Debo gets thrown off of that route a little bit. Brock's throw is high. They can't execute. So, you know, it You're not going to get much out of him in these press conferences. You know,
and he's not going to throw them under the bus. So
he's got to be very frustrated. he is a bad loser, you know, to an extent. All these football coaches are mm-hmm. bad losers because they know that it could be their job at any point. And they're asking him questions about, like, Tim Kawakami and others were just kind of asking him about, you know, why didn't this work? Why didn't that work? And his answer is kind of a non-answer. It just didn't work because it didn't work. And that's kind of how he does that. But I would, you know, I would like to be a fly on the wall of that tape watching the next day on certain plays to see, like, okay, whose fault really was this? Because he also has a reputation of being very honest with his criticism with certain players. And so that would be interesting. But again, you know, we can only see what we can see on TV and we can only glean what he's going to answer.
And the podium is not the place for that type of honesty. Honestly, you know, you deal with that in the meetings, and I have no doubt that, you know, he doesn't sugarcoat it or pull punches there with who is responsible. And he has done it. He has done it in the past, on the podium. You know, Brock just missed that throw, or, you know, whatever. He just doesn't, you know, and I can only assume that those are players that when he does that, he has established a rapport with them that, he's not going to damage their, relationship by calling it as it is and saying, you know, this is what it is. It seems like, in a way, somebody like Brock is more open to that kind of.
All right, let's switch gears to the things that we liked. And I'll go first here.
Jimmy is the kind of guy who would.
All right, JJ. I thought JJ was awesome. You know, the thing about Juwan Jennings, he's not gonna be the breakaway. He's not gonna make that catch and go. He's just not fast enough. But they needed a third down. They needed a third down conversion, and they threw to him short of those sticks. And he looked like Derrick Henry running through the defense to get that first down. That's just toughness. That's just grown man strength. All those things that you really like about JJ. He was the best pass catcher when Brock threw the ball in his space. You're like, he's gonna they're cooking. He's got it. And I just thought he played awesome. Like he has had a terrific season. He got hurt, missed a couple games with injury, but when he's been on the field, man, he has been an excellent player, and I just love watching him play this year.
Yeah, he is tough. Like you say, on that third down, he was like 4 yards away from the sticks, and he just dragged everybody with him to get that first down. Just a monster play, and then however you want to talk about it, the volume, you know. He, what was it, 10 catches? It's ridiculous, just ridiculous numbers. And anytime we needed him to make a play, he did. I mean, it's just, he's just playing off the charts. You know, he's been hurt some, hasn't been out there. Yeah, 10 or 12 targets. I mean, just great. He's just been a revelation this season.
What were some of the things that you liked?
Well, we had the JJ we talked about until the last two drives, the defensive front pressure, you know, with I got three sacks down here, but I think it was four. I think Gross Monos got one too, because I know at a certain point it was JJ and Floyd had one and a half each. And then, so yeah, I think it was four, not three. And then it was like seven quarterback hits, So the pressure was good. We kind of talked about that. And I mean, Moody didn't miss any kicks today. So that was something that I liked. I thought
it was Leonard Floyd's best game until the end there when he was spent.
And like you say, they were just, sucking wind. And it just highlights something we already knew, is it's a completely different ball game when Nick is in there versus when he's not in there, especially when you lose somebody who, I don't know, heretofore, I mean, we paid him a whole bunch of money, but honestly, Hargrave hadn't really wowed me as like this off the charts talented guy, but he's more talented than any of those other guys that we have. And when you remove that level of talent and all you've got is, basically it's called spade a spade. And I'm not being, I'm not trying to diss those guys, but I mean, they're basically just replacement level players. None of those guys are, they're just replacement level players. And that's kind of what you get there. Those guys are hard pressed to come up and make a play that's gonna a game changing play, because that's just really not their role.
I thought in the second half CMC showed a little bit of spark. I thought his legs just looked a lot better. That first half was just him running into the line of scrimmage and just getting pushed back. But there was moments in the second half where I thought, oh, that's the guy that we remember. I expected him to break one at the end there. That's the way that I sort of saw that game going. So when I saw the play action incomplete, I was like, wait a second, I envisioned this already. CMC was scoring on this drive and it didn't happen. The other thing, and I'll end my things that I liked with this, which is they re-upped Demo, right? They paid him like he's one of the valuable players on that defense. So his first game back, or his first game with the new contract, just the fact that they invested in him, I thought was really interesting. I didn't know if that was going to happen necessarily. It doesn't say great things about Mooney, but Mooney is still dealing with the grieving of the loss of his child, so he's not back yet. But they made their choice, and this is where they're going. And that means, more than likely that Mooney's going to be gone next year. So I thought it was, the investment in the young player. I want to give the 49ers brass, their front office, props there. I thought that was a positive going into the game. I just wish that, I guess the thing that he showed up most on, he did lead the team in tackles. He also got in a fight. He was scrapping with somebody there. But yeah, that's it for me for things that I liked.
Yeah, that's a very team friendly contract that he signed. So I didn't think they would sign him at all, but I also thought that he could, make a lot more money than that. But him and his agent, how can you sneeze at $38 million guaranteed? That's a lot of money.
In this league where there is so much worry about injury and so much worry about, especially as a DB, losing a step and you're kind of done. So yeah, I thought, this is where we would have thought that he would have had a little bit more leverage, but maybe he didn't feel like he had as much leverage as the 49ers did. And he enjoys being on this team. So I thought it was nice. All right. You have your blame pie.
Well, it started out as a credit pie. So that's, there's that. And I didn't change it. So what I had was the defense was 50%, just remaining competitive, and the pressure and the interception, and they really kind of had Geno locked up until his numbers really, it's the last two drives that are really, when you look at his numbers, Yeah. So, and then, so I guess if I switch it to blame, it's the red zone inefficiency of the offense, and then the interception didn't help. So, yeah, I didn't change it. I didn't notice it until actually just right now that it was more credit pie than blame pie.
The Brock threw the one pick, which was, you know, there are some games where he tries to throw things into tight windows and they get tipped up and picked off like that. And there was another one that he threw that I was like, come on, dude. Like, you already touched the stove and you learned that it was hot already. Let's not do that again. You know, he didn't. I thought he played that. He played sort of what Seattle was going to give him, but he did not play outside of that. He did not break through in any way. Everything was in front of us, in front of him. You know, he didn't bust anything. And I think some of that was Kittle. If Kittle was there, there would have been some opportunities. So, you know, he just kind of did his, it was almost like his whole thing was just not to screw the game up rather than, you know, there were opportunities for them to take advantage. But yeah. So I guess I wanted to mention a couple things. So the injuries, we talked about Bosa, it sounds like it's an oblique, and the crazy thing is it's on the other side of the original hip pointer. So he's dealing with, he was dealing with the oblique last week. And then this week, I'm sure there was, he was still probably dealing with that to some extent, but he believes maybe he overcompensated and he's got an oblique thing. He's got an oblique thing on the other side. And when they talked to him after, after the game, he didn't make it seem like this was going to be an easy one to deal with. So if the Niners have to handle Green Bay and Buffalo without Bosa, that might be hammer time. That's going to be
This could get ugly quick because, you know, when you look at it, now we've got three losses in the division. So that means we have to win it outright. Because we don't have a tiebreaker versus anybody at this point. Yeah, so, I mean, we still got two other division games left, so I guess theoretically that could change, you know, based on the other matchups in the round robin. But, yeah, this it's not good. And what, Seattle? So the other three teams are now, we're all 5-5, but then Seattle, I mean, Arizona is only a game clear of us. So, I mean, it's, this is not dire by any means. I mean, it's still, the division is still in play, but like you said there, you know, you start, if losses start really racking up, I mean, it could get away from us, you know, fairly quickly. So yeah, it's concerning.
What happened to money making Mitch? I had no idea he was even hurt.
I didn't until they signed that guy to the practice squad. I didn't know until that reporting came out that there was anything wrong. And then clearly he's missing games. So that's not, because this guy, I mean, I guess, you know, he did as well as you'd expect for somebody who was on the street. So yeah, that's very concerning because we need all the edges we can get.
Yeah, I don't know about JP returning kicks either. He fumbles that. So there was a kickoff. He misses the catch, but in missing it, it's not like the ball just fell down and he just sat on it. Instead, it kicked forward, and there was a Seattle special teams player who looked like he was just going to grab it. And it was going to be Seattle ball, and then JP slapped the ball out of bounds. And then Matt Barros, with his dry wit, said that that was one of the best kickoff returns of the season for the 49ers.
Oh, man. It was, you know, it's just every week is something with the special teams. Yeah, I saw that Cowing is hurt. I don't know what happened.
Concussion. It was a concussion. So he returns the kickoff. And he got tangled up, and he was very slow to get up. And then this was right before the end of the first half. And then after the first half was over, the report came in that it was a concussion.
Okay.
All right, let's get to it. Coach Singh, player of the game.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Can you imagine how mad Mike Singletary would have been if he was coaching this game?
Oh my God. Yes. Well, you know, in keeping with this season's pattern, the player of the game was easy. I can't remember any week this season that was like nip and tuck. Or that gave us, like last season, I feel like we had two or three weeks at least where it could have been
Multiple players.
And I think actually me and you, you know, diverged a couple times on who our guy was. But obviously today was easy. It was JJ. I mean, he was, you know, as Greg Olsen pointed out, he was probably the best player on the field today on either team. And he was just dynamic. So yeah, he's definitely the Coach Singh player of the week.
Yeah, just you know, and he got the contract, or actually no, they picked up his option. Is that what it was? Like, what was his contract situation?
Yeah, they didn't pick up the option, but so they ended up just signing him to a 2-year deal, which was basically just a little under what that tender amount was of $4 million. And like I've been saying in the group chat or on Facebook, which people hate, love to hate, is you're going to hate JJ at the end of this season, buddy, because yesterday's prices are not today's prices. Yeah. $4 million is not going to get it done for him next season. I'm sorry. He has, you know, outside of the games he's missed, he has showed up and showed out every week, just about. I mean, I guess maybe last week coming back off the injury, not so much. But, I mean, he's had at least two really huge games, because I would categorize this one on the level of the Rams game. He was just everywhere. Yeah, he is definitely, you know, I don't care what the depth chart says, he's no longer a number three receiver in this offense anymore. And I don't know what that'll end up meaning. You know, obviously BA is not going anywhere with that deal. But I don't know what does that mean for Debo or what. But he is definitely proven that he is a top of the rotation receiver, and his old role is just kind of, you know, we kind of find, I mean, it's a completely different position, but we saw it with Azeez Al-Shaair. It got to a point where he just wasn't nobody's number three linebacker anymore. It didn't work. And it was funny to me to hear people talking about when Dre got hurt, for him, with him coming, no, he's not that guy anymore. He's not gonna be anybody's second fiddle. And you see the way he's balling in Houston. He is a top of, you know, I don't know, he's not as good as Fred, but he's a leader of a linebacker core. He's that good. And I think, you know, I don't know that JJ is necessarily a number one because of the things we talk about with his speed or whatnot, but he's damn sure not anybody's number three. You know, he's just, he is somebody who, as we've seen, he can handle double digit targets per week. I mean, and I don't know that when everything is, you know, as it should be and everybody's healthy, if he's doing that every week, but he clearly can handle it. So he's up for, you know, if I was his agent, I'd be very, very happy with the development of him this season. It's good for him, man. And I'm, you know, again, we kind of see things the same way, in that, you know, why would you want him? And I get it. Some fans, you know, why would you want to? He's obviously way outperformed that contract this year. Why would you want him not to be compensated, you know, with at his fair market value? It just, it doesn't make any sense to me. I'd rather him have the money than Jed. So, get your money, man. Good for him.
Yeah, so he's signed through these next two seasons, and then he's an unrestricted free agent in 2026 at the age of 29.
What is, do you happen to have the number there of what his number is next year?
So the cap hit for next year is 3.5.
Ain't no way.
And his contract that he signed before this year was 2 for $11.89, but the guaranteed at the signing of the contract was $8,435,000. So signing bonus was 6.2.
That's, again, I could be completely wrong, as I was on the demo, Simon. I can't see a world where he plays for 3.8 next year. It's unfathomable to me. As a employer, I would feel some kind of way about him. Because again, that's just the way I look at it. Because I am a business owner, and I take care when my employees show up and show out, I compensate them for that. I don't just, well, you know, it's $20 an hour, and that's just what it is. I mean, regardless of, you know, we had somebody quit, and now you're doing both of you guys' job. Well, you're contracted at $20 an hour, and that's just what it's going to be. I'm just going to get two jobs out of you for that $20. That's just not how I roll, and I don't think that's ethical to do. When we're doing good as a company, they should get bonuses, you know, reflective of the fact that things are good. That's just how I see it. So hopefully he is able to see some kind of benefit from, you know, his uptick in his, I mean, crazy uptick in production. He had like 40 targets all last season, and he's close to that in like three games. Was 11 a day. It's just, you have to pay him. And again, you had mentioned it. I thought it was kind of curious that I'm still, you know, after what Ricky did last week, that the target distribution was still really, really top heavy. He only got two. And like you say, I can't, you know, I'm going off of the two on the box score, because I don't remember
him being targeted at all.
Right. That was interesting, because I just kind of thought he had sort of earned more looks. So I don't know, you know, what that, you know, how they were, I can't imagine it. They were like rolling coverages to pretty Ricky.
I kind of wondered if they just trusted their pass rush would force Brock to make quicker decisions. And if you can do that, and you look at the Niners' speed on the wide receivers, like Debo is not someone with sprinter speed. Debo picks up speed as he gets the football, and Jennings and Pearsall aren't fast receivers. So then without Kittle, you have who's the backup tight end? Siebert. And you know, there's a reason he's the number two tight end. So there was, outside of CMC, there was really no speed on the offense. So I wonder if they just depended on their pass rush, and then they just kind of pressed a little bit so that you know, just thinking that they weren't going to be able to get open very quickly.
I don't know if it's just a simple matter of the difference between college and pro, but watching him at Florida, I always thought he was a lot faster than mm-hmm. that, because he does not look fast at all in the NFL. He just, that's not going to be a part of his game. I was hoping that we would see an increased workload for him, but it didn't come to pass. So,
yep. All righty. We'll be back after the Green Bay game next week. The only solace I have is Buddy, who's a Bears fan, was like, you know what? Jordan Love likes throwing the football to the other team, and I'm going to live on that one. And I was like, okay, I hope that goes to next week, because Niners play Green Bay. He's not healthy, though. You could tell Love's still not healthy.
And we get Tom Brady again. Yay!
Oh, man. I liked Olsen today.
Yeah,
I
thought he was really great. Good. He's really good. He is great, probably is overstating it, but he is good. He's very good.
Look, I listened to Romo at the end of that Kansas City-Buffalo game. I think Olsen's better than Romo.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Romo plays a lot of golf, so, I mean, he's probably not spending a whole lot of time prepping.
He was saying how, they were down 9. Kansas City was down 9, and they were at the 2-minute warning, and he was still saying, until that clock reads 0, I'm not going to say that Patrick Mahomes is, can't win the game. I was like, I don't think this one's in the bag for them, buddy. So, all right, we'll be back next week to talk Niners Packers, hopefully with a better theme, hopefully with more things that we like than dislike, hopefully just a better game overall for the Niners, because, 2 more losses and we're probably talking about, that they're going to have to get a lot of luck coming into, to make the playoffs. 3 more losses and they're done. This is how it's going to work this year. So, all right, we're done. We're done. Hopefully the Niners aren't done, but we're done. We'll be back next week. So for Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.